Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're here at the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern, 3647 North Clark Street, getting ready for our On Deck Luncheon series. And the first half of the show, we talked a great deal about the Cubs, their weekend, about the U.S. Open, Phil Mickelson, about the course itself, Brooks Koepka's victory, and did a lot of Bulls talk. Vinny Goodwill joined us, and I went through an over-the-weekend research project, looking at another way to evaluate Bulls drafting.
Also, I've calmed down after the USGA did what they did. I really appreciate your work to kind of settle things a little. I thank you so much. I'm now no longer as mad as Phil Mickelson is. So first up here on the midday is an anniversary to celebrate, Dan. It's an anniversary that you and I both should have been celebrating from the get-go. I don't know if you realize this, but Michael Lewis's Moneyball came out 15 years ago today.
Wow.
15 years ago. Now, regardless of how you like to consume your sabermetrics in your broadcasts or in your baseball teams, it's impossible to deny the fact that that book, sabermetrics in general, has completely changed the way the game is consumed and operated, both. A couple of things. Jeff Passan wrote about this in his column on Yahoo, and I thought a couple of things were fairly interesting. First off, the velocity in baseball has absolutely gone up since Moneyball came out. The average fastball velocity in 2003, when the book was released, was 88.9 miles an hour. Your average fastball velocity
is
92, now?
92.2. That is astonishing.
And trending upward. Also, there's clearly been a proliferation of three true outcome hitters, guys who go, you know, strikeout, walk, home run kind of thing. We've seen more shifts, and we've seen the bullpen used in a completely different way over the last 15 years than we ever have before. But that book meant as much to me as a young... Remember, I'm, 2003, so that's a big time in my whole baseball observation and consuming thing.
A lot of 2003 here. That's where we started with the Bulls draft,
it
too,
is.
Right?
And for me, that's freshman year of college.
Right.
That is... And I didn't get to the book itself for about a year. So it was out, and I was busy, Halo and beer and everything in freshman year, and then I finally got myself set and ready to go. I read Moneyball, and that completely changed the way I... But that book, if you haven't read it, if you still haven't gotten to it, forget about some of the antiquated ways that book looks at sabermetrics and some of the just, the A's just assuming or grabbing as much on-base percentage as possible and eschewing, some of the rest of the hard hit rates and stuff that we know now, that the chapter on the Ricardo Rincon trade, where he gets him from the Indians while they're playing the Indians in that series, that chapter is unbelievably cool. Unbelievably cool. And worth going back to read just about every single year or month during a baseball season. If you haven't checked it out, go do it now or just read that chapter because it's terrific.
Let's track what we have known, what we've cataloged about the Kilauea volcano, as it's provided an endless supply of dangerous treats for
things
you.
Things that kill you.
Right. It has regular lava,
right?
The actual erupting, burning lava, the molten stone that is headed toward destroying homes and roads and everything, right?
Right.
There's that. There was hydrochloric acid when it met seawater.
Mm-hmm.
There was sulfur dioxide gas.
Just in general.
There were the lava bombs that were these incredibly dense rocks that were shattering people's legs and breaking people's homes.
Right. They're the size of your fist and they weigh like a car.
Microscopic bits of glass to be inhaled into your lungs. And then something described as Pele's hair, which is a phenomenon named after the volcanic goddess of Hawaii, that were tiny little balls of glass that were shooting out as well, that would fill up, you would step on them and they would
fill
up
everywhere. Oh yeah, forgot about
remember
that
Pele's
one.
Hair.
We have
now there's something new.
Remember Pele's hair, that's like a mantra.
There's always something new. This from Forbes. The Kilauea volcano has been fiercely erupting for well over a month, and now residents are finding little green gems that have fallen out of the sky. The green gems are olivine crystals, a common mineral found in Hawaii's lava. At jewelry quality, the mineral is called peridot. As the volcano erupts, it blasts apart molten lava, allowing for green olivine minerals to be separated from the rest of the melt, and they fall as tiny gemstones.
So how do these tiny gemstones kill us?
I didn't say they were bad.
Oh, really?
They don't have to know.
That's what
I said.
Bad?
That's the twist. That's the surprise ending here. That we're sorry. The Kilauea volcano has said, yes, I may be spewing all of these other things that can kill you and hurt you, but here's some jewelry.
Did you see, I was scrolling through on Twitter, and the lava flow has become, it's gotten so fast.
It's a landmass, yeah.
I didn't realize, so I'm watching this, the GIF go by on Twitter, or GIF, however you like it. It's GIF, by the way. And I'm watching it go by at super speed. I'm like, okay, this clearly must be sped up. There's no way it runs this fast outside of a Tommy Lee Jones film. It's just, there's no way. Turns out, no, that lava flow is so fast that scientists, geologists think it's unprecedented. That never really before has that mass of lava moved that fast.
Yeah, you like to assume you can outrun it.
No, not this.
This one you're probably not going to be able to outrun. It's going to get you and you're going to be too hot.
It is pretty easy to have a bad day on Twitter. I just haven't noticed a guy this prominent have a bad day on Twitter in quite a while. Mike Leach, who is otherwise pretty entertaining for things he says and pirates he likes. Yeah, generally we like him. And I won't even get into the politics of this specifically. At least I'll try not to, because obviously those are deep waters. But Mike Leach on Twitter yesterday, head coach at Washington State, tweeted out a video of Barack Obama addressing a crowd back in, I believe it was 2016. The video itself, regardless of what it says, is heavily edited. And Leach put it out there as a statement on whatever. It doesn't even make any sense to go bring up what it was edited to say. But it's this heavily edited and fake video. And he tweets it out asking for conversation points on something that's completely and utterly fake. And then, and I respect this some, but not a whole lot in this instance, doubled down on it that it doesn't matter that it's fake or not. He's just trying to spur the conversation. So my question to Mike Leach would have to be this. If someone took a press conference of his that was so clearly and obviously edited so as to say stuff like, I don't know, our quarterback sucks, or we can't win a damn ball game, stuff that he said before but doesn't mean, wasn't exactly what he meant at the time, you don't think he'd be decrying the idea of just using it for conversation?
Yeah, he's trapped himself.
Mike Leach with a really bad day on Twitter. Best of luck rebounding, coach.
I don't know if you were planning to get to this story, but I'm going to grab it because you haven't yet. Milwaukee Brewers relief pitcher Adrian Hauser was trying to seize the moment in an opportunity that could have been once in a lifetime. But this, according to BleacherReport.com, there was vomit on his jersey before he even threw a pitch.
Mom spaghetti.
According to the New York Post, Hauser was recalled from the minor leagues prior to Milwaukee's 10-9 loss to the Phillies on Sunday. He entered the contest in the eighth inning, and before he could even throw a pitch, he threw up behind the mound.
Two times.
Well, he stayed in the game after the grounds crew watered the grass, but then two batters later, he threw up again. He ultimately allowed two hits and one run over an inning in what was just his third appearance all season. There's no word on whether it's because of mom's spaghetti or not. You don't want to bust toss mom on that thing, but the last time I saw a pitcher throw up on the mound, it was Catfish Hunter.
Really?
If somebody made, I don't know if this video exists, but I remember watching this as a child. Catfish Hunter fielded a ball and swallowed his chewing tobacco.
Oh no! Oh no!
And not like a little dip in his like a chaw, like an old fashioned,
like something he'd been working on for six innings,
like a cud. And he turned all shades of green and just completely lost it. So that was that was the last time I had seen him.
You know, you say you go to a baseball game, you're going to see something you've never seen before.
Did you see Craig Counsell, the Milwaukee Brewers manager, did you see his comments after the game?
Mm-mm.
You know, Counsell looks like he's 12 still. Yeah. You know, he's got this young dad look. And it was a really hot day, I guess, in Milwaukee. And it's just kind of, it was fitting to me watching some of the post game the council is like tired out and sweating during the post-game press conference and really looked like a young, exasperated dad who had a kid that just booted all over himself and a completely un... Like, it's just not... You can't do that there, son. Right. This is not the place. Right. Like, he threw up in church. And he's just... Oh, and council's right. Like, yeah, oh, God, I don't know. He's fine. You should know that he's fine, but just a situation... I just thought it was hysterical that on Father's Day weekend, council is making excuses for a very young man making a debut with the major leagues, vomiting all over his sweater. So that was one of mine. You've stolen it, but I will give you this.
Yes.
These reports just out, and really, these reports have been percolating for the better part of 2 weeks or so. We touched on them a little bit 2 weeks ago. But this from SNY. The Mets are reportedly ready to entertain trade offers for virtually everyone.
For Manny Machado.
The Mets would reportedly, here's the subhead, the Mets would reportedly be more open to dealing Syndergaard than DeGrom. They'd prefer to hold on to Brandon Nimmo, Michael Conforto, Robert Gzelman, Seth Lugo, and more open to trading Syndergaard than Jacob deGrom, but apparently everyone else, like Jurys Familia, everybody else out of team control, perhaps after the season or two, ready to go. And I find
That's
it
responsible.
Interesting. I find it interesting. Fascinating, really. And I've been keeping my eye on this Mets team, not just because of LOL Mets, but because in 2015, that Mets squad swept, blew out, ended any conversation of the Cubs moving forward into the World Series. And in the World Series itself, you had Matt Harvey tell Terry Collins, I'm going out for that ninth inning, in a game that blew up completely behind him. It was just that team had been set up with so much young pitching. Remember, Zach Wheeler wasn't even on that team. He had blown out the Tommy John, right?
Right.
I mean, there were so many young pitchers in that system that their rebuild, their reload, however you want to term it, was so diametrically opposed to the way the Cubs had done it. Those two teams.
We'll get pitching when we need it.
And we thought, man, for years this would be a whole thing. There were even conversations, and rightly so. Like, I get the idea of Javi Baez for Jacob deGrom and the trade. They're so loaded in pitching, and the Cubs have so many hitters. Wouldn't it make sense for these two teams, despite the fact that they're going head-to-head, to even things out? And I just, you know, you're at this point for a lot of different reasons with the Mets, but you're at this point where, you know, I don't think it's necessarily a referendum on accumulating arms. I don't think the Braves themselves or other teams that have, you know, the Royals like that have to necessarily change the way they're going about acquiring talent. But it's just fascinating to me to look at a team 3 years later, that has completely had their fortunes reversed.
And that is the Midday Midway, brought to you by Horowitz and Horowitz. Need legal advice from a reputable attorney? Send questions you want answered to WBBMNewsRadio.com/legal advice. And look online for free Legal Fridays with Horowitz, Horowitz and Associates. It's WBBMNewsRadio.com/legal advice. We always say, what do you think? 312-644-6767. We are getting ready for our Cubs On Deck Luncheon Series, presented by AZEK Building Products, Xfinity, and this location, the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern. We are going to be joined by Ian Happ.
Yes.
At noon, and we'll be joined by Luke Farrell, the relief pitcher, who will be here because Javier Baez's injury rehab and treatment is going to preclude his participation today. So we are getting a late pinch hit from Luke Farrell. So
he's come up in a big spot before. Yep. That'll be good. And he's got some stories to tell. The guy, I mean, he's been in the game for as long as you can be in the game with his family.
We're going to have some fun with that and more. That'll be coming up at noon. You've got the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Getting set for a lovely afternoon here at the Budweiser Brickhouse, the Bernstein and McKnight Show.
It's already a lovely morning.
Right, it is.
And the food's fabulous, too.
Yeah, you've taken down a couple of things so far. Continuing our baseball conversation for a little bit earlier in the afternoon, did you notice that the owners' meetings took place, or there were owners' meetings over the weekend? Rob Manfred had a little chat, and apparently there's some reporting about the attendance issues in baseball and whether or not that's something Manfred himself, the commissioner, wants to try and fix through some of the ways he's been trying to fix a number of things in baseball, some of it going well, some of it not. Eric Fisher, who tweets for the Sports Business Journal and had covered the meetings, had a couple of tweets out about this over the weekend. Here's the pair. MLB owners' meetings have concluded. A few nuggets from Rob Manfred. With attendance still down 7% despite bad weather, he signals new concern that there are other issues at play besides the rain and the cold. The 2019 schedule could have some new tweaks, including two-game weekend series. Manfred also, again, predictably ripped New Jersey for its short-sighted entry into legalized gambling, i.e. they're not paying integrity fee to MLB. That's his parenthetical, not mine. League, meanwhile, still hasn't figured the final outcome for its DraftKings equity, but still likely to sell it. So a couple of things in there that I thought were fairly interesting. Some that, if you're going to change scheduling around yet again, boy, you're going to have a lot of clubs upset at more scheduling changes. I mean, already after adding the extra off days, teams have been frustrated in how the schedule had been being pumped out by the system they've got doing it now. If you're adding two-game weekend series, you know, your Saturday-Sunday series, right. I would assume is how you're going to do it because you're not going to travel on a Saturday. At least I would guess. You're changing the lineup a little bit. You're changing some of the numbers of times you're playing teams not in your own division, right? Wouldn't you have to necessarily change some of that math? These are large changes to an issue that has kind of been ignored some by baseball in the past. Remember with revenue sharing and the idea that they'll just report tickets sold, at least since the 1990s, what with, you know, TV revenues and stuff helping prop up teams.
Baseball Advanced Media, that's really where it was propping up.
Oh, it's had a ton of money pumped into that entire operation.
Like $50 million per team, something like that?
They're down. Oh, it's a bunch. Yeah, I think that is. I think it's 50, yeah. They're down about 2,000 fans per game across baseball so far this year. A total of 1.8 million fans down per game. Some of it has been attributed to the weather, obviously. But some of it also is attributed to teams that haven't been participating in a whole lot of baseball. You know, whether that's the Miami Marlins.
That's what Joe Sheehan writes. You want his thought, too, because he brings up the Travis Sawchuk's piece about the sharp decline in attendance across
right.
MLB. The American League, 11 of 15 AL teams are seeing declines compared to a similar point last year. And he says whether you want to call it tanking or not, a disturbing number of baseball teams, especially in the American League, took the winter off, and instead of getting people excited, they all but told their fans to check back in 2020. And he chronicles specifically the moves of the Blue Jays, the Orioles, the Tigers, the Royals, and the Rangers, and tried to figure out what's going on here. I also think we're at a level of expenditure when, you know, and I always think about it, you know, when I walk around here, when you see what parking is going for on a Monday.
Right.
A Monday day game. With your actual number, even if you got free tickets, even if somebody gifted you the tickets, even if they're sitting at a desk in the office and your boss said, hey, want to go to the game.
Right.
Okay, great. Free tickets, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you look at the face value and you see, well, for the family of four, you know, $75, you assume you're saving, you know, that counts as like save $300 that you're just... But then you look at what you're actually ending up spending on...
If you're driving.
Yeah, driving and food and parking and all the everything else. That it's significant. And the time.
Mm-hmm.
The time, what you need to set aside. How many people can actually take off of work? How many people can't actually have that time to do it? We're also so pushed and pulled and squeezed in everything that we do. Did you notice, and this is a tangent, did you notice the two messages that the USGA was sending in their promotional spots during the U.S. Open?
No, I did not.
One was the Jack Nicklaus play it up. Don't play from the tips. Make the game easier. We talked about it. Play from the next tee. Play
yeah.
from the senior tee. Play from the middle tees.
I do if recall seeing that.
Kid, move it up. The other thing was play nine.
Really?
And they had a whole promo. It was, I think, a 30-second promo of the benefits of playing nine holes. And saying that, yes, it counts. It is real golf.
Your scores aren't as high.
But emphasizing to people that it's okay to just play nine holes. You don't feel like that you're into a full five-hour day or four-hour day, start to finish, door to door. That's, you know, going to a baseball game. Forget what it viewing. We sit at home. We're watching a three-hour, 20-minute game.
Right.
Start tacking on the amount you're carving out of your day to commit to doing something like this, in some cases multiple times a summer.
I just don't know how much of this issue is attackable for Major League Baseball. I mean, we are more and more comfortable in our homes. We are more and more able to watch baseball in our homes. And I think that's something baseball itself, that Major League Baseball, the MLB, may have to lean into here. I mean, you still have blackout restrictions throughout the country that affect people disproportionately, especially in the middle of the country. Iowa Cub fans, for instance, who can't watch any baseball games because they're restricted by five different teams being in their viewing areas. So now you've got to watch the Angels at night when you can, I guess. There's a way that you've got to lean into this and change around some of these antiquated rules in order to get back, whether you want to call it market share or just eyes in general, young eyes who will grow up and then take future kids to the game, however it works out. You've got to get people watching. You've got to get more people involved, and it's more of an uphill fight to get the 15-year-old kid to the ballpark than it is to let that kid watch any game he wants on or she wants on her iPad.
I am a perfect – I'm a really good example of the problem that MLB has. I know I'm not a neutral example because sometimes the ballpark, having spent so much time working in ballparks, I don't have the same romance with it. But I still try to when I go to games. But I literally live, what, a mile from here? From Wrigley Field?
Maybe, yeah.
Right? Right there. Lane Tech is how far? Is it a mile?
I think it's probably a little over.
Okay. So a mile and a half, whatever it is. And I get free tickets.
Yep.
I can walk into Mitch's office and say, hey, you got a couple lying around for this game, that game. Somebody in sales has to, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's just the truth. If I call in a favor and, write a nice note or maybe just have somebody say, hey, you want to go to the game? I can get them.
Mm-hmm.
We went to one game.
Last year?
With my kid this year, before he left. One. I mean, I literally can walk down. I got to get on that bus.
Yeah.
Get on the Addison bus and be right there. I can pick after school, whatever. And it's just... it's the time.
Yeah.
It's the commitment to setting aside everything and then making sure that your kid doesn't have a band practice or soccer or hockey or basketball or baseball or whatever he's doing. It's just when we talk about it and everybody I will never understand how season ticket holders, even the people that sell half their tickets.
Right.
Are you really going to 40 games? How do you do that?
It's really...
how do you do that?
It's team involvement, too, right? I mean, some of this burden is on the teams themselves. Mm-hmm. It's not just creating new rules or coming up with a runner on second base as soon as you start extra innings or whatever the hell you want to do from a front office perspective or from a league perspective. But these are teams... It's why I look at the Brewers, actually, and have really enjoyed watching, other than, what you got to watch here. It's really enjoying the Brewers for the offseason approach they took. They said, to hell with it. Let's go after it. Nobody else is. And I thought all offseason long, as we stood at an impasse between teams and large contracts, and granted the Brewers did some of it via trade, which is, I thought, well engineered, you had a team that decided to zig when everybody else was zagging. I appreciated that. Mm-hmm. I like that idea of grabbing some market inefficiency. It's a fun team anyway. And that ballpark will draw when they're good. It doesn't draw when they're bad. Mm-hmm. It's one of those classic mid-market examples, probably even small market examples, where, look, as much as we bagged on the Marlins for having a non-existent fan base, it's not quite like Tampa.
And a boondoggle of a stadium.
Oh, my, it's abhorrent, the deal they struck with the people there. But the Marlins themselves are down 10,000 a game from this year to last year. That means, and granted, the Marlins were, they were interesting. They had a couple of good players, and they sold them all off. But they were drawing, they were finding another 10,000 people per game to come out and watch that team from last year. That's a non-zero number. That's a meaningful thing. So when you've got as many teams that have just punted the 2018 season, it almost doesn't matter that you've got a team like the Cubs doing so much around, like here at Brickhouse. Or here at Gallagher Way, or in and around the ballpark, making this an attraction and a thing to come see, you still, it seems, across baseball, have to have a product on the field, specifically in the mid to small markets, to get somebody out to watch.
Sports on the Score brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Wolves are making big plans for their 25th anniversary. Get your season tickets now. Receive exclusive benefits. Visit ChicagoWolves.com or call 1-800-THE-WOLVES. The whole question of does it matter? With baseball advanced media doing what it's doing,
mm-hmm.
maybe we are getting toward attendance not mattering.
Maybe
these are just big TV studios.
But aren't you going to have to explain that, at least to some point, to your financial holders, right, to the people who are invested in the team? I mean, the overhead on the ballpark I mean, you still have to clear those costs, right?
I know.
You still have to maintain and maintenance those things. You're still, even if you have two or three people walking into that ballpark, your responsibility for the safety of those people.
Sure.
You have to have the cheese cups filled for the pretzels that are out there. You know what I'm saying? Like, the operation is still going to continue on some scale.
We just got some really good news. Yet another change of plans. I had mentioned that Luke Farrell was going to be joining us with Ian Happ in place of Javier Baez. Are
we going into the bullpen again?
Now we find out that Luke Farrell will be in addition to Javier Baez.
Well, my day just
and
got a lot
Ian
done.
Happ. Javier Baez, despite his injured elbow, is going to be here. So we are going to have a crowded stage, which is good. That's based on the latest information, and the happy people that you hear reacting are here at the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern for the Cubs On Deck Luncheon Series, presented by AZEK Building Products, Xfinity, and the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern. I'm going to avail myself of some more food, I think, and we'll grab some phone calls, 312-644-6767. We have some people who want to jump in, and then at noon, our baseball guests will be here. We'll talk about all kinds of stuff. Bernstein and McKnight on the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This segment's brought to you by Fogo de Chão. Savor authentic Brazilian steakhouse flavors at Fogo de Chão, even on a busy schedule during weekday lunch. Visit their locations in Chicago, Rosemont, and Naperville for lunch, starting at just $15. The room is filling up here in anticipation of our On Deck Luncheon Series. The fine folks here from AZEK Building Products and Xfinity and Budweiser are all gathering and glad-handing and schmoozing. And
oh, there's so much schmoozing.
Oh, the schmooze levels are off the charts. Connor brought up that the owners, Rob Manfred, are addressing what they feel is another problem regarding attendance. We know Rob Manfred's really, really good at treating symptoms rather than treating the actual cause of problems.
It feels that way.
And
yes,
this would appear much like the issues with the stagnation of gameplay itself would be the commissioner, again, looking at ways to treat symptoms rather than asking the really difficult questions about what's causing the problem.
Although I guess, and we'll get to a couple of phone calls here because I know a lot of people have opinions on this issue and really the symptoms in general, but I don't know, you know, for lack of a gigantic change to the games itself, we've talked about it a lot. One of the biggest issues, and whether it's a symptom or whether it's the disease, I think is probably up for debate, but velocity is a gigantic driver of the issues that Rob Manfred has issues with in this game. And there is no real change to that other than perhaps moving the mound itself, whether that's up, down, or back.
Be back.
It might be back.
Might be back.
But that'd be a gigantic, you know what I'm saying? That is,
it's a different sport.
That is a completely different sport.
You've absolutely changed it. That's
you
like
have altered the physics
that's
altogether.
Like making the net higher in tennis for some reason. You're talking about something or moving the hoop up, and it is a huge deal. Rob is in Galewood. He's on the score. Welcome to the Bernstein McKnight Show, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I have this problem that you're talking about, Dan, and that I'm a White Sox season ticket holder, and you're right. I have to part ways with a lot of them, and what I've figured out is that I have to basically downgrade my expectation of the experience. So there is no, for me, I got two kids and there is no get there hours before the ball game and take in the whole thing and stick around afterwards for a few pops. I usually leave my house at first pitch. I get there at about the second inning. And usually if I've got my kids with me, I got to leave by the seventh inning stretch. It's not ideal, but as somebody who is hoping that my kids are baseball fans when they get older, this is the way that I've been able to figure out how to do that. My biggest problem, honestly, is your second point when trying to find somebody that actually could also try and go with me. So if I don't have my kids, trying to find somebody else that is either in close enough proximity to the ballpark or can take their entire evening and toss it away at a moment's notice. And it's a problem, but
the problem might also be that you're just inherently repulsive and nobody wants to spend time with you. So
well,
trying to overcome that.
That's you, Dan.
Well, we are both White Sox fans. You are absolutely true, Dan. I'm pretty repulsive, repugnant, whatever R word you want to put on it. And so that's certainly part of it, but it's not a bad place to be. My investment is low only because I have the cheapest seats at the cheapest ballpark in major leagues, and so with that I can at least swallow that But I know that's not the case for everybody. I appreciate you guys talking about it.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. You got it. And I wonder, I'd ask Rob two questions, I guess, in about that issue itself. Like, how long has he been a season ticket holder? Because I wonder when the buy-in happened, you know, on the White Sox. When is it that you got in on this? And is holding them more a function of the price you're paying?
That's the sunk cost argument,
or is
right?
holding the tickets more because of the investment he's willing to make in that future of the team? There are a lot of White Sox fans who have been sold on a lot of the prospects that are likely going to get, you know, promoted here once the All-Star games in the minor leagues happen, and once those prospects come up,
well,
the young guys that are already there. But there's some sort of intellectual discussion that's going on probably within Rob's head or any White Sox fans or any White Sox ticket holder. There is a promise of future success here. And just like I had a friend who held season tickets for the Cubs, I think he bought them in 14 or maybe it was 13. And the idea of holding on to them was very much because it's going to be easier to get these now than it will be in 16 or 15. You know? I mean, there's a buy-in.
The difference is separating when you use the term investment. It's loaded because there is a literal investment.
That's true.
But independent of that, independent of the money that you've spent or whatever math is that you do to say, I'm going to sell these for a certain amount to recoup my literal investment, it's your emotional buy-in as a fan, which is a completely different currency. Because there is something to be said for placing a value on how it makes you feel. And regardless of what you're spending, if you're really just looking at it transactionally, that gets past the idea that being a fan is illogical. You know, what we're doing here doesn't make sense. It's emotional, it's illogical, and if you get out of it what you need to get out of it, you have to sort of take the math out of the equation and just say, look, I'm doing this because I want to. I'm doing this because when the team gets good, it's going to make me feel good, not when the team gets good, I'm going to be able to recoup some investment, which I just think it's important that we look at those on separate channels in the conversation.
To back out to the phone lines here at the Brick House Tavern before we're sitting down with a trio of Cubs, it's Jack in Palatine. What's up, Jack?
Hey, fellas. Yeah, I bought tickets 10 years ago to Wrigley with two buddies from high school. And, yeah, the idea was when and if they ever made a run in October, there'd be kind of an ease of experiencing that. And, you know, two things have happened since. The secondary market, the Cubs have driven up so high now that it's become such a pain as kind of a customer of these tickets to get rid of them. And then I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, the time aspect of it, it is such a tax on time now. I'm in a line of work where I can gift these tickets to clients, customers, and my customers don't even want them. It's become more of a problem to give these away at no cost. So, it's probably a function of me getting older, but I see a huge, huge problem with baseball and how they're going to fill these stadiums going forward.
Yeah, it's not just baseball. It's all not sports.
It
is anything. This is why I brought up the golf issue from over the weekend and why the USGA is reminding you that nine holes is okay. It's we don't have the time. And I'm not just talking about the people wasting time screwing around on Facebook and taking pictures of themselves and noodling through the Twitter feed. I mean, in a gig economy, when so many people have to always be working at something to make ends meet or to help pay for college or pay off loans, the amount of driving. Think about what's going on with traffic now and how one problem begets another. I don't want to get too meta on this right now, but bear with me for a second. In this city, we know that studies have been done in Chicago about what rideshare drivers have done to flood the bloodstream here with more of these red corpuscles.
And drive everyone insane.
Well, yeah, and I always think of the police line packed like lemmings into shiny metal boxes, contestants in a suicidal race. And here are more of these shiny metal boxes that are everywhere, and our traffic is so horrible. These people who are doing this are doing because they need to make ends meet. They need to have an app on their phone that's getting them an extra couple hundred dollars.
Right.
And it's been, as a side hustle, whatever it is, and how it's being marketed in TV, they'd be able to take a date out to dinner because you got off of work and now you're working as a freelancer or now you're working part-time because your full-time job got eliminated. And everybody is looking for any opportunity to make a couple extra dollars. And it's because of that that the traffic has gotten worse. So in itself, it becomes a deterrent to doing something like then driving down to a game.
Yeah.
It's all feeding on itself. The very aspect of people having less time because they're working more jobs, it means that that in and of itself is making it less likely to make these commitments to things like 18 holes of golf or going to a game.
Rob Manfred can't affect those things.
Right.
He can't change those things. Even if
those
even
are large, those are secular. Large issues.
No doubt. And even if, like Jack's talking about, even if Rob Manfred is able to chop the magic half hour off the average game time and bring us back down to 2 hours, 35 minutes, or whatever it is for a nine-inning game that he'd like to see it played in, that doesn't change the time it takes for you to get to the ballpark. That doesn't change the time in between pitches where nothing's going on. Or maybe it does. You know, who knows? You got to get out of the ballpark. It doesn't change the cost of experience anywhere. But it does, I mean, it's important, I think, that you do have teams trying to change the experience while you're there. I mean, that's the effort that's being made by a lot of different ball clubs, whether it's this one here at 1060 West Addison with the gorgeous lawn and the big screen television and the fountain for the kids, all that stuff. You look all across baseball, and there are teams trying to improve the creature comforts for the fans once they get there. But you
and incentivize them to stay. What do you think this is where we are right now? What do you this where the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern,
right.
All of Gallagher Way, this is a concerted effort on the part of the Cubs to make your trip here to give value added. It's not just go in that ballpark, see
right.
a ball, it's before, it's after, it's keep you here, it's give you more reason, create more of a draw. And sure, you're saying, well, it's obviously to separate more people from their money. Well, things are gonna cost things. You're going to have to pay for things, but it's an idea that you're but for making the effort. If you're going to pay that for parking,
mm-hmm.
you can hang here a while.
Yeah, you've got things to do. You've got families to entertain. And I guess, you know, to a certain degree, if the game is going to change, I go back to this idea of velocity affecting so many things within the game, you know, on the field, that change to the game, change to the actual physics is something that we've tried to affect before. I mean, the baseball changed, right? And I'm not altogether convinced that that was just a manufacturer's error, that we're all well within
the acceptable
norms of baseball constitution. It's just not. It's not all there. And in order to grab that half hour back, there may have to be much more drastic things done, if indeed that's where baseball wants to end up.
He's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. We're going to have some special guests joining us in just a moment as we are going to get started with our on-deck luncheon in earnest. We are expected to have Javier Baez and Luke Farrell and Ian Happ all here hanging out, talking Cubs, talking baseball, and everything. That's coming up on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.